May it please the court. Mr. Walton was sentenced to a life term without the possibility of parole after a trial which presents this court with a hornbook example of a violation of a defendant's right to a public trial. The Sixth Amendment to the United States Constitution provides that in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial. After conducting an evidentiary hearing on this question, the district court found that Mr. Walton was indeed, as he had alleged, tried late at night on September 19, 1989 and September 21, 1989, that the courthouse was locked during his trial, that the public was barred from entering, and that his fiancée was turned away. The court also found that the closure was total. That is, the only people present were the judge, the state's attorney, the bailiff, and appointed counsel. The judge...
All the witnesses?
No. Well, there was the prosecution's witnesses.
Well, then there were somebody there besides the ones you enunciated. The prosecution's witnesses were there.
Yes. Yes, that's...
Was
that
the defendant's girlfriend a proposed witness?
No, she was not. His fiancée was not a proposed witness.
For the defense or the prosecution?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So but she's just a member of the public who was denied access to the court.
Well, I believe she would come under the rubric of being a family member or, at the very least, a friend, certainly more than a friend, being his fiancée at the time. And the Supreme Court and the circuit courts have unanimously been very solicitous of a defendant's right to... have, at the very least, his family members and friends present at his trial.
I thought this was your beef was the public at large was being kept out.
That is enough to constitute a violation of defendant's right to
Your beef isn't specifically about the fiancé. It has to do with the public at large?
That's correct, Your Honor. The specific evidence in this case that his fiancé and that one witness that we know of that was... that wanted to be at the trial and could not because of the nighttime trial in the locked courthouse.
Did you have a defense witness that was unavailable or wanted to be there for the plaintiff's or for the prosecution's case?
Wanted to be there on behalf of Mr. Walton.
For the prosecution's case?
No. Well, yes, he wanted to be there for the prosecution's case. That's
well, there's
right.
No constitutional right to be there if he's going to be a witness, does he?
Well,
he doesn't have any constitutional right to be there because the judge can exclude the witnesses.
Mr. Hill, the witness you're speaking of, is not pressing his claim before this court. This is a claim that belongs to the criminal defendant, Your Honor.
Yeah, I understand that, but he's claiming that he was the public was denied, and I want to know who the public members were denied. We've established it was his fiancé. And now there is somebody else who has no, which is why I asked whether his fiancée was going to be a witness. Because those can be excluded even if it's in broad daylight, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Well, two things, Your Honor. First, the claim is that the public was barred from entering. That is enough to substantiate.
Yeah, you're not answering this question. Was there a separation order?
No.
Well, there could be.
There could have been if
so that means it is not they have no constitutional right to be there.
Well, there has to be.
I think that the public will let it go there. What I want to know is if a court were to try a case set under the conditions under which we try now, where great segments of the public are not allowed in for security reasons, is that a violation, currently speaking, of the constitutional right?
The constitutional right is not an absolute right. It's a qualified right, and if the Waller's four-part test were satisfied, then it could overcome a defendant's objection to having a closed trial. But that's not at all what happened in this case. In this case, there were no justifications set forward by the state. The state never asked to have this trial closed. There were no security reasons justifying
it. He didn't actually have the doors of the courthouse open either, did he?
No, but he had no reason to believe that the courthouse was closed. He had been in a holding cell behind the bench.
Did he have any idea that the court, at night the court was closed, that the doors were closed, locked?
There's no reason to believe that my client had any knowledge that the courthouse was locked.
How about your the attorney representing your client?
There's no reason to believe that he knew that the courthouse was closed. But even if he had known, it would not in any way affect the violation of my client's constitutional rights, because when the courthouse was closed and locked during the trial on that first day, and Judge Grady, the district court judge, found that the trial was actually closed for the first 2 days.
My only question that has to do with facts. Supposing the trial started at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, proceeded in some place about 6 o'clock at night, they close the doors and bar the public, and the trial proceeds. He goes on. Is there anything wrong with that? Has their constitutional rights been violated?
If the closure has happened during a critical juncture of the trial,
well, couldn't be broken during the trial.
Well, yes, it is during the trial. There are cases in which there's been a trivial closure.
What constitutes? I'm trying to get at when does it become crucial? My question is, if this courthouse closes at 6 o'clock and they lock the doors and you can't get in,
yes.
If there's a trial going on in progress, must they stop the trial then? Because the public is being barred from coming into the courthouse. Must they stop the trial and continue it until the next day, or can they continue on with the trial?
Well,
because you might be on the threshold of having discovered something really great that will upset an enormous number of cases that are wandering around through this court over the last several years.
No, I don't. I think this is an exceptional case in the circumstances.
Well, what about my case? Does that apply here? If the door is being locked,
yes.
And preventing the public of it is a constitutional violation that prevents the proceeding of the trial, does that occur if the doors are locked during the trial? If they're operating again, 6 o'clock, bang, they close the doors, lock them tighter than a drum, you can't get in. Public's now denied access to the courts. What do we do now? And the jury comes in at 11 o'clock at night with a guilty. Where are we now?
If the trial goes on for another 5 hours, if the jury's deliberating for a very short
time. No, the trial goes on.
The trial goes on, the prosecution's put on a witness during that time. That's a critical phase of the trial. That's clear. Then, yes, it's been denial of the defendant's constitutional right to a public trial. Yes.
You can just open the door, and now you just open the doors to an enormous number of appeals.
That's not true, because there are...
Well, no, that's not true. They don't close the door at 6 o'clock. No, the trial's not right after 6.
They do close the trial at...
They close the door.
Well, I think that sometimes they do, but...
Well, the jury tell me they are done.
Okay. First of all, night court happens all over this country all the time in circumstances in which...
Night court, they leave the doors open.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Night courts, they leave the doors open.
That's correct.
We're talking about specific programs right now in place in this building. And I want to know whether your position extends to that.
Yes. The trial must be open to the public during the trial. When a critical phase of the trial...
You don't have to push your argument that hard, because that would be... Presumably, that's a case where the interested public is there, right? The trial started in the morning,
right.
And people thought it would go to 5 or 6 or what have you. So the people who are interested in the case are there at 6 o'clock, and if they want to stay, of course they can stay. They're not being dragged out.
Why
you want to... Well,
your argument is
hard.
As I understand your position, and I'm not even about the people who are just abstractly interested, or specifically interested in this trial, it's the abstract public that has a right to wander in and out. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your
So
Honor.
It's not the people just that are interested that you're talking about.
No. We've included that in our brief because it gives specific evidence.
But you admit the right isn't absolute, so in a case in which there are security concerns that lead a court both to want to sometimes have trials that last after 6 and also close the doors, you'd agree there's some kind of balancing test for those cases.
That's exactly right. It's the Waller 4-part test. But in this case, there was Judge Posner has pointed out, there was a complete closure. There were no spectators.
There wasn't a complete closure. We had the same opportunity for the fiancé or any other member of the public to come in before the normal end of business hours. The record reflect why the fiancé didn't arrive before the end of normal business hours?
In fact, she did arrive before the end of normal business hours on both of these days, and she was told that the trial would not be taking place until 10 o'clock in the evening, and that she should come back then. She did, in fact, come back at that time. tried to gain entry to the courthouse, and the courthouse was locked, and the court officials turned her away.
Does the record reflect when she arrived and was supposedly told that the trial would begin at 10 p.m.?
Yes, the record does reflect that, and it's in the briefs. I haven't got a pin site for you at this moment.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Paxton. Mr. Glick?
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Michael Glick. I'm an assistant Illinois Attorney General here on behalf of Respondent Appellee. Initially, I'd like to apprise the court that we are withdrawing our procedural default argument premised upon an independent and adequate state procedural ground. That is not a valid argument. Nevertheless, this court should affirm the denial of habeas corpus relief on one of two bases. One is because either petitioner forfeited his Sixth Amendment claim, or the second is because the Sixth Amendment claim was not implicated
here. Forfeiture is a procedural default argument. Are you withdrawing your procedural default arguments or not?
I'm withdrawing the procedural default argument that was based on an independent and adequate state ground.
Yes, and forfeiture is an independent and adequate state ground. I'm now totally flummoxed.
Well, there are several kinds of procedural default. There are several kinds of waiver. And then there's forfeiture, which is the defendant's inability or the failure of the defendant to invoke a right, and that's what occurred here.
Well, jump to your waiver argument, the waiver of the Sixth Amendment. Right? That's the right of confrontation is what you're talking about?
What happened here, this is an unusual factual case.
What I want to know is, what do you think was the predicate for the waiver? That he didn't complain about the doors being locked?
That he didn't complain. He didn't raise a Sixth Amendment public trial claim and didn't complain about anyone being precluded.
Is there anything in the record to show that he knew the courthouse was closed, that he knew the public was being kept out, or he knew his fiance had been denied an access to this during the trial?
Yes, Judge. If the evidence
no,
was
no,
hearing.
No, no. In your brief, you say that about the second night, right. Not the first night.
Yeah.
You can see the first night.
That's
he
correct.
Had no...
That's
I don't know what good it does to have the second night in there.
If he waived because he didn't complain and he didn't know, how could he complain?
The point is, he had counsel who represented him. And counsel
Is there anything in the record to know that to indicate the counsel that the courthouse was shut up there in the room and he couldn't know what he could get in?
There is nothing in the record to indicate that either the court nor counsel knew.
Right.
And
well,
I can't waive it.
Forfeiture is your defense. You have to prove it. Also, as Judge Easterbrook said, the only purpose to invoke a forfeiture rule would be so that the state courts don't get sandbagged.
Correct.
So if you're withdrawing your procedural default argument, you're necessarily withdrawing your forfeiture argument.
I thought that's true, and
I'm not sure what's left of your case then, actually.
Well, what's left of the case is the argument that my opponent relies on is this court's case, Braun versus Powell, and I think that Braun versus Powell cuts in favor.
I thought the critical thing was that apparently there's no harmless error rule here. So, and you know, as Judge Bauer's question pointed out, there wasn't. It's like not like a O.J. Simpson trial where thousands of people are clamoring to get in and so on, but. The court was closed to the public. The only people who were allowed in were the people who were either the lawyers, the court officials, or the scheduled witnesses. So there were these two members of the public, Hill and the fiancé, who wanted to come in, and they're closed, and they can't come in. So why isn't that a violation of the Sixth Amendment? It may not be the worst violation, but if you don't have the harmless error defense, then don't you lose?
Well, I think as the court indicated in my opponent's argument, and as the court indicated in Braun, this is not an absolute right. And
yes, of course, but you had no reason. I mean, put it this way. You might have a reason to have night court. You might have a reason to lock doors. But you had no reason not to inform, Walton what was going on or inform the fiancé that if she wanted to attend the trial, she'd have to come before 6 o'clock and sit there for 4 hours. I mean, that's not the biggest hardship in the world, but there's no excuse for the way you handle this. That's the problem. So there's nothing to balance against the violation of the public trial right.
There is a balance here. I think that, first of all, we have to look at what this case is. It comes here in the habeas context. So unless petitioner can point to Supreme Court precedent that's directly on point that suggests...
Well, there are plenty of precedents that say that, you know, there's a right to a public trial, and if it's violated, there may be some de minimis defense of some sort, but there's no harmless error defense.
Well, the triviality standard that this court embraced in Brown...
I don't think this is trivial. I mean, this isn't, you know, you have... I mean, these are the only people who want... These are the only members of the public who want to be there. So if you exclude the entire interested public, I wouldn't call that a trivial violation. It's sort of the only violation possible, right? No one else wanted to be there.
It's not clear exactly why Ms. Buckley was excluded, whether she failed to find the correct courtroom or not, but even if we assume that she was excluded, if you balance the factors here, there's no question...
There's nothing to balance, because the entire public is excluded, and it's not excluded for any reason, you know, security or this or that or anything. None of the reasons you could give seem to be present.
Well, Judge, this is a case that's unlike the Supreme Court cases. This isn't a case where the court affirmatively acts to close the courtroom doors, as was the case in Waller and the other cases that are cited. This is a case that are beyond the contours, and therefore...
Yeah, but why does that make any difference?
Because we're on habeas.
If the decision... Just listen to the question. This is not a game show where you have to give the answer before the question is complete. Why should it make a difference whether the decision to close the courthouse doors is made by the judge or the sheriff, as in this case? Right. Your defense is essentially the judge didn't give the order to close the doors to the building. That order was given by the sheriff or the marshal or somebody else, but was given by a state official, and one might think it's even less defensible if the order is given by the sheriff or the marshal, because that person is not authorized to make decisions in a pending judicial proceeding. So why should the state be better off if the decision to keep people out of the courtroom is made by a person other than the judge?
The problem here is that we're limited by Supreme Court precedent. No Supreme Court precedent recognizes that where the judge is unaware...
Can you address my question? Why should the state be better off because the decision is made by somebody other than a judge?
I agree with you.
Is there some reason?
There is no moral reason. There's no legal reason why they should be, except that in this case, there's no denial of the four underlying rationales that underpin the Sixth Amendment right. As Judge Bauer pointed out, Buckley was not subpoenaed as a witness. She likely would have been excluded. The district court made an express finding that she would not have been a credible witness on the only thing she could have testified to, which is the entrapment, because she testified...
The public trial rule is different. It's partly maybe to allow moral support for defendants on and other parties, but it's also to permit monitoring of the Administration of Criminal Justice. You think, you know, when a person is sent to prison for life, or sentenced to prison for life, you think, yeah, the public might have an interest in that.
Absolutely. This isn't a great case, but this isn't a situation where the state came to bear on this individual and conducted this in secrecy. This was a routine drug case, as the district court said.
Well, I don't know. Life imprisonment, not quite routine yet, even for drug offenses.
Well, the case itself was a routine case, and the fact that Buckley wasn't present and wasn't going to be subpoenaed as a witness and wouldn't have been able to testify because she testified at the evidentiary hearing.
Public and witnesses, they're two different categories of people.
Well, this is unlike the cases where there was no transcript of the proceedings. We have a transcript of the proceedings. It's true that the entire public wasn't there. There was a court reporter.
It's not a question of whether they were there, because there are a lot of trials conducted. Nobody walks into the courtroom at all.
Correct.
But they can, and that's the point. Well, if they want to, they can. Somebody wants to come in, they can come in and sit down and watch the judge make a jackass of himself. But in this case, they couldn't.
Well, the record,
could get in.
The record isn't clear as to when the trial began. So people might have been able to get in. People might have been able to get in at an earlier time. Minette Buckley testified that she first came to the courtroom between 6:30 and 7:30 at night. That's after regular business
hours. During the course of the trial, nobody could get in. Am I correct?
If you take the factual findings of the district court, that's correct and not clearly.
Well, do you think he made a factual mistake when he said that the courthouse was closed and during the trial for the first 2 days nobody could get in from the public?
I think that it's unclear from the record that Judge Reyna testified that in some cases he may have held his trial late. He couldn't remember this case. He never indicated that he started cases.
There was a dispute over whether the trial was after hours.
There's a dispute as to whether it ran after hours, like your hypothetical. It may have started earlier and run later.
But Judge Grady made it. He actually listened to witnesses, right?
He did.
He heard people. He heard Judge Rain and so on. So, or how does that? So, why should we upset his
factual finding?
Well, we've argued in our brief that they're not supported by the record. He credited.
If they're supported, you'd have a different version. You think maybe they're.
We do. If you look at,
I think they're erroneous. I didn't see how you could show they were clearly erroneous.
Well, if you look at Minette Buckley's testimony, it's clear she's unable to remember various things, even the ages of her children. This occurred 10 years earlier, and it's clear that she wasn't clear where she was going to the courtroom, and that perhaps she was just told that Mr. Walton wasn't going to be tried in this particular courtroom at that particular time. Not that there wasn't a trial present. The judge credited her testimony despite the fact that she indicated she was a crack and cocaine addict and had been
But look, we can't overturn a credibility finding on the ground that the judge shouldn't believe a crack addict.
No, but if
doesn't fit well in the mouths of the state of Illinois, who sends people to prison for life on the testimony of crack addicts.
Sure, if
say that no federal judge can believe a crack addict.
Sure, if their testimony holds up, but if you look at the entirety of her testimony, she's unable to recall anything.
But that's exactly what defendants' lawyers say to us, right? Look at the testimony of this crack addict on which my client was sent to. Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Glick.
Thank you.
Mr. Paxton, do you have anything further?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
May it please the court. Judge Bauer, I'd like to specifically address your question. We will not be opening up the floodgates of litigation in this case because...
just the sluices.
Not even the sluices, because this could be simply addressed by a trial judge when the court doors are going to be closed and locked for the night, to simply ask the defendant, do you waive your constitutional right to a public trial?
And if he says no, then we go ahead and then we have to stop the trial.
Well, then provisions could be made by just letting the security guards know if anyone expresses an interest, ask, and if anyone expresses an interest.
But you see, the point of the public thing has nothing to do with asking. They don't have to ask. They can wander through the building from court to courtroom to see if there's anything there they want to see.
Right.
You don't have to express a particular interest in a particular trial to have access to the courts if you're going to have public trials.
That's right. And
so why are you taking the position you're taking?
But I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Why not be consistent? Why don't you stick with the original position? When they lock the doors, they either things stop or there has to be a complete waiver of the proceedings.
I am sticking to my original position, Your Honor. I do think that when there is a diminished...
Well, you gave me the story about the public, somebody outside asking for permission to come in. He wants to come in to the app and let him in.
Well, what I'm saying is that a trial judge can make specific provisions in order to keep the trial public, quote-unquote, after hours by simply making arrangements with the security guards at the front door.
You were doing better until you got there.
Okay.
Now, before you sit down, I want to pursue the question I was asking earlier. I've now looked in your brief to determine what you say is in the record about the time when the fiancée came. Your brief says that she came on one day about 6 o'clock, on the other day between 6:30 and 7. That's not within normal business hours. Is there anything that shows that she either arrived within normal business hours or had a reason why not?
Your Honor, I'm not familiar with Cook County Circuit Court. My understanding is that she had arrived during during quote-unquote business hours. She had been admitted to the courthouse and had gone to check the docket sheets, which were posted.
Where in the record does that appear is what he's asking.
Yes.
Who testified to that?
Who testified to that?
Yeah.
Minette Buckley testified to that, Mr. Walton's fiance. She testified.
Yeah, tell the record that she testified she got there during normal business hours.
I don't know that she used the words normal business hours, but she was admitted to the courthouse, and she did go in and check the docket sheets, and she was informed by court officials that...
That's in the record.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And if it's not in the briefs, I would be happy to provide a supplemental briefing or a 28-J letter to that effect.
If you want, you may. Leave it to your judgment.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Pax.
Thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Flick, also. Next.